Hi, this is Brent Barber, the founding director of the Bicycle Film Festival, and this is Resonance FM. Ride on until the break of dawn, because you don't stop.
Welcome to The Bike Show with me, Jack Thurston. This month, The Bike Show is 10 years old. I can hardly believe it. But what I find even harder to believe is this interview from the very first edition of the show, broadcast during the 2004 Tour de France.
Just started a new company called Rafa. It's a high-end clothing brand designed purely for road racing, and we were frustrated that although lots of money spent on bikes and lots of innovations happen on bikes, materials and gears and things, clothes, cycling clothing, essentially hasn't changed in 30, 40 years. You get a jersey and it's got three pockets on the back and it's got a zip. And nobody's really tried, and we felt that actually you could do a lot better and you could create products that really work better. And also we wanted to create something which was more stylish, because if you look at the old guys from the 50s and 60s, they were just a beautiful combination of colour and cut and line.
That was Simon Mottram, in case you hadn't guessed, founder and chief executive of Rafa, back when it was just a couple of guys with a box of merino wool cycling jerseys and a collection of cycling memorabilia. Last month, I went to visit Rafa's new London headquarters, which is in a large and typically stylish warehouse-type space in King's Cross. I met with James Fairbank, Head of Brand Marketing, and Laura Bauer, Head of PR, and began simply by remarking on how amazing it was that Rafa, a small London startup just a few years ago, was now supplying the kit for the winner of the Tour de France.
I guess it's a measure of how far the company's come and what Simon's achieved from when he sort of started out in 2004. The Sky deal was something that we debated internally at length because of the impact that it would have on the brand, that would a lot of people have got quite a lot of emotional investment in, and obviously it was always going to put us under a lot more eyeballs.
So it wasn't an instant we'll do that.
I mean, it was instantly that was definitely the sentiment. It was like, oh, this is incredible to be asked, because of course we're all cycling fans, so the idea of being asked to work with Sky on the team kit was incredible. But we did have to measure it against what we created prior to kind of signing the deal. So yeah, like everything really, Simon's always got quite a strategic view on how that impacts his vision for the brand. So yeah,
the black is there, but you had to work in the aquamarine into the Rafa colour palette and sort of shift pink to the side a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, we're very used with Rafa Condor JLT, so we're very used to being kind of a principal name partner on things, and so to have complete ownership of graphic identities, it was slightly strange to be a less dominant partner in this. But to have the arm stripe on and then the stripe on the shorts as well, and using black, kind of get rid of the back the white panel that was on the previous kit. Yeah, we feel that it's pretty close to how we design it if we were starting afresh.
And has it made a difference for the riders? Did they think, oh yeah, great, we're going to be wearing Rafa like all the cool kids?
I hope so. I guess the rider feedback we've had is kind of a completely constant thing. So I've just been sat in a meeting watching feedback come back in from the Dauphiné. So Chris has just fallen off, and unfortunately he's had a tumble, but he's not sort of seriously hurt. But it'll be interesting to have a look at the condition of the product that he's torn in that crash, and then see if there's anything we can kind of learn from that. So it's a constantly evolving process, like developing the product for the riders, sort of custom fitting it. It's all tailored for the individuals. They always get a choice of kind of which chamois thickness they want to use, kind of how the shorts are constructed, what length, and then evolving that over time, because in January they're a very different shape to July when they're kind of on in condition for the tour. So we've learned a phenomenal amount in the sort of two and a bit years we've been involved.
How has it been different working with Sky as against working with the Rafa Condor team?
I mean, I think the external perception of them as a team, certainly that I held before, where they actually look at every single thing, I would say has been mirrored in our experience, whereas perhaps in a graphic sense too, Rafa Condor JLT were always very keen to kind of take our clothing expertise and then apply it, whereas it's been far more collaborative with Sky, such that the they've asked for things that we absolutely haven't had in our range, and so we've had to go away and develop them. And I guess this mesh jersey is a good example of
that. Yeah, we've got a jersey in front of us. Do you want to talk us through this one?
Yeah, so this is a jersey which in total weighs about 90 grams. It's made of a sort of semi-opaque mesh material. Which,
how does that compare to a typical racing jersey?
The other racing jerseys we make, they have five different short sleeve jerseys that they can kind of call on, but they do a 140 gram one would be their kind of standard spring to summer weight. So this is significantly lighter, but I think mainly it's the feeling and sensation of airflow you get through an open eyelet mesh on this jersey, which kind of makes it stand out. And originally this was a material that we were using for base layers, so we gave them a whole load of base layers made out of this mesh material, and they came back to us and said, oh, that would be amazing if you could actually make a jersey out of that. And we were like, okay, are you sure? Because it's not going to offer any kind of sun protection. And they were fine with that. So
do you make the fabric itself, or is this a fabric that's made by another company that you make into a jersey?
Yeah, it's a fabric that's made by another company that we then make up into a jersey, and that's quite often the way that a lot of the products are developed. We will go to ISPO or other large trade fairs, find out what material science has been developed over the last sort of 6 months or so, pull down interesting things, and then we have a prototyping studio in-house that we can then run up samples that will then sort of be tested by about 20 people internationally. And then the ones that everyone's like, oh, that's a great idea, let's see if we can work that into kind of key areas, they then get mocked up in larger sample sets. And if they're particularly good, then we try and get them onto the Sky Riders for feedback. But we have to make sure that they work properly before we send them to Sky. They don't do the prototyping for us.
So looking at this one, it's kind of fishnet material, isn't it? I mean, it really is.
it really is. I mean, I think this kind of this kind of open mesh has been used quite a lot on side panels and perhaps behind rear pockets for ventilation, but it's not been used as kind of full jersey material, mainly because, I guess, and this is quite a sort of important point, Sky are professional cyclists, so they have a very specific morphology, the way that they look, and they are completely performance focused. So if they can have something that kind of makes them feel like they're cooler, then they will take that on, even if you go to the lab and kind of prove.
Not cooler in a sort of hipster terms, cooler in a temperature terms.
Cooler in a kind of, I can feel the wind blowing through it, and kind of I feel like I'm not overheating as much sort of sense. If there's a fabric like that, then they'll kind of ask it, even if you can go to the lab and go, actually, we've got a solid fabric which we can show you works better in terms of moisture transfer, they'd actually go for the mesh version more, because psychologically it feels like it works better for
them. But what if they get terribly sunburnt through this garment? Because didn't that happen with Chris Froome?
Yeah, Chris Froome. So we do a skin suit version of this as well, with mesh side panels in the legs and a completely sort of mesh upper. And we gave it to the riders with the instruction that it was going to offer next to no sun protection at all. And Chris went out with no sun protection on, and then predictably enough came back, and you could see his radio pocket wasn't burnt and his HRM strap wasn't burnt, but everything else he was kind of burnt to a crisp. That was back in January, and it was one of those sort of palm to forehead moments of like, well, it's a see-through jersey, so yeah, the idea that you'd have to apply an SPF to it is something that we'd probably been far more vocal about now.
And so will they be wearing these jerseys in July?
So one of our team liaison folk has just gone out to the Dauphiné with the versions that they're going to be using in the tour. And that, includes a jersey and lightweight shorts and the sort of aero suit, which is a one-piece kind of pocketed version with a full-length zipper on it. This mesh is being rolled out. And then we commercialise this as well. So this will be available to the public in early July in the mesh version.
Now, I have to ask, you can do all these amazing things with fabric and making it really thin and really light and everything like that, but it's black. So isn't it going to just suck up the rays of the sun and cook the ride? I mean, isn't there a major advantage for being, the British national road race champion rather than having to wear this black garment?
But a lot of the black jerseys and a lot of the shorts we treat with something called coal black, which is a chemical technology applied to the garments, which actually means that they absorb the same amount of UV whether they be white or black. So although there might be this kind of, again, the psychological aspect of like black materials absorb more heat, when treated with this material it puts the two colours on parity. So yeah, I mean, another interesting one. I think we were watching the Dauphiné early this week, and all of sort of Sky were marching along with jerseys zipped up, and a lot of their competitors had them unzipped. And that was, for me, it was like, oh, that's an amazing thing to see, because they're all dressed in black. And yeah, it's amazing that they haven't kind of completely undone their jerseys and their climbing, whereas a lot of their competitors have. So I hope cold black is one of the reasons for that. They're just not feeling as hot, or it's the mesh construction, or it's a combination of the two things.
Well, thanks, James. So for 10 years, Rafa has been developing these fabulously technologically advanced garments for wearing while you're cycling. But another thing, which I think is actually, for me, more interesting and more important for cycling as a whole, are all the events and activities and things like that that you put on as a company, which I could see why in the early days, when you're trying to establish a bit of credibility, trying to reach out to people who are already cycling and create a bit of brand visibility, why you do them. But now the relationship is there with Sky, you know, Rafa's well known, you've got this huge operation that we're sitting in right now. I would imagine that maybe you feel like, well, we don't need to do this grassroots stuff anymore, but you are.
I think actually it's more important than ever to keep doing it. And the reason that we are here is because we're all passionate about road cycling and getting more people on their bikes. And we're an online company, really, mainly. So being at the events is one of the ways to connect with our customers. And for instance, the Hell of the North that we did earlier this year, so it's our Paris-Roubaix tribute ride, 400 places went in about 20 minutes, which is incredible. It's in its fifth year now. So we know there's still a massive appetite for these events, and we just love running them.
And so do you assess these things from a sort of commercial business point of view, or do you just kind of say, we've got to do it, we've got to go ahead and do it?
If I was talking to my boss, I would say this is 100% a commercial decision, and I've looked into all of it. A lot of it is guts. There is, of course, a commercial. There has to be commercial behind it. So, for instance, the Supercross series, we also make a cyclocross range of clothing. There's a very tangible link there. I think that the UK cross scene is growing and has room to grow even more. And we can help it to grow by creating this series for everybody to get involved with, bringing a bit more glamour to the event, actually, making it more of a spectator sport too. But like I said, it does help us to sell more cyclocross clothing. The Hell of the North race, on the other hand, is nothing but a really good day out. It's just a lot of fun, and we have fun doing it as well.
You've got a whole women's cycling kind of thing that you're promoting, because, you know, like it or not, women's cycling is behind men's cycling in sort of in every way you might look at it, whether it's participation at an amateur level through to remuneration and coverage at a pro level. So talk us through the things that you're doing for women's cycling.
So the biggest thing we're doing is the Women's 100, which is in its second year this year, and it happens the same day of the Étape du Tour, and we are asking women globally to ride at least 100 kilometres wherever they are. Doesn't matter how fast, you've just got to ride at least 100 kilometres. And so we've got about 4,500 women have signed up so far via our website. And it's more of a global movement than anything else. But we do know there's so many women out there who, first of all, there's a lot more women on bikes than there were in the last few years. It's been absolutely incredible, the growth. But women and men do, on the whole, tend to ride differently and tend to come to cycling, and their cycling journey is very different. And so what we're aiming to do with the Women's 100 is to create a lot more rides. So not just the 20th of July is the actual day of the event, but in the run-up to it, we're having training rides. We have evenings in our cycle clubs, just a way of women meeting other women so they can find other people to ride with.
I was talking with Laura Bauer and James Fairbank of Rafa. Now, the biggest event that Rafa put on this summer was the Tempest Festival in Yorkshire to coincide with the Grand Départ of the Tour de France in that county. I wasn't able to attend, but someone who did go was Howard Marksmith, author of the Jersey Pocket cycling blog. Howard is on the line. Welcome to the bike show. So how did it go at the Rafa Tempest?
It went very well, Jack. It was at Broughton Hall, where Rafa have one of their rounds of their Supercross events. So they know the place quite well. And I believe it was actually Roger Tempest, who's the Baron of Broughton Hall, who came up with the idea and said, look, let's put a festival on and do something with Rafa for the tour. There was an awful lot of different things to do. There was a good atmosphere there, and once the weather did improve, as we saw on the TV on Saturday and Sunday, then it really got into the swing of the thing. They had a lot of different activities, talks from authors going on. They had very well researched rides in the locality that had been recce'd by people from Rafa and then were run by Strava. So you could go to the Strava tent, download a GPX and go out and do these rides of various lengths, or they had some guided rides as well if you just wanted to turn up and sign up at the right time.
Was it a festival that you had to pay to attend, to camp at?
I mean, certainly in terms of what I'd looked at, you know, trying to find accommodations in Yorkshire at that point for things that were going on, it was £85. So basic camping, bring your own tent or a camper van, was £85 per person for the full, I mean, 4 nights, I think it was. I did think it was good value for money, certainly at the bring your own tent or camper van end of things.
Because we were both at the Eroica, which was in Bakewell. Was that was a week before, a couple of weeks before, wasn't
it? 2 weeks before, yeah. Two weekends before.
That was the first time that Eroica, which is this Tuscan bike ride, vintage bike ride, had been held in Britain. And I thought that festival was amazing. And it was a free festival. You obviously had to pay to ride the Eroica. What I thought was really nice about the Eroica festival was that it was a free festival. Essentially, you don't, unless you camped, you pay to camp, but you didn't have to pay to come onto the site.
There wasn't the amount of people that came to the Eroica festival, which was, as you say, a free event, and really tried to engage and bring in everybody from the community around the festival. Whereas Rafa was much more looking at, you know, bringing people in who were coming up specifically to Yorkshire for the tour and needed somewhere to stay. So I think there was a slight difference there. But I would agree with you that the Eroica Festival worked brilliantly in terms of engaging that cross section of the community around with the kids and the and whole families. Rafa got that to a certain extent, but I think because of the distance, there was a fewer number of families, but there certainly were a lot of five families there, and there was a children's play area, similar to how Eroica was set up, but just at a slightly smaller scale from that side of it.
Because I think the Eroica Britannia, it's a festival that you would have paid to go in, and it was so well done. Just attention to detail was phenomenal. The food offering was really good. That had a couple of good bars. It just felt like a little bit of Glastonbury, really, but all about bikes. And they had, obviously, the vintage stuff was there in spades, and a lot of people, it's just small stands selling vintage bike bits, sort of kind of like a cycle jumble. They were there, and they got free stalls, I think. Small independent traders, and then obviously you had the bigger brands. With their bigger stalls sort of more in the centre of it all. There was sort of street theatre going on. There were straw bales and a piano and for the kids to sort of play around with. I just was very, very impressed by the attention to detail and how they put it on for free, essentially.
Going up the day before, I took my children to Eroica, and thinking about going up the day before, as somebody had said, a friend of mine had said, "Oh, I'm taking my two young girls," and you know, and I thought at that point I was oh, brilliant, because at least my two will have someone to play with. But when we got there, there were kids everywhere. There was loads for them to do. They had, you know, there was a full fairground with dodgems and bouncy castles and all that sort of stuff. So actually, we didn't even meet up with with my friend and his two kids, because they were having such a great time, I guess, somewhere else in the festival. It was of that scale where you could, over 2 days, not meet somebody. And in the piece that I wrote about it, I did suggest that, yeah, because they've got a 5-year franchise to run it, so it will happen again and again. It could become the Glastonbury of cycling events, festivals, in that it wasn't a requirement or a necessity to actually go out and do the ride on the Sunday to really enjoy it. And I thought that was brilliant.
I mean, and as well as the attention to detail to providing, you know, a good festival site, a good festival atmosphere, and interesting things for people to do and see, I am certain that the vintage focus of the Eroica is essential to that, because it allied with a whole lot of other things that people are interested in. So you didn't have to come along and look a load of people in Lycra going off to do a sportive. It was, the whole atmosphere was a lot lighter than you'd find at a sportive HQ.
Yes, yeah, very much. And I think people are just engaged with looking at old bikes, looking at, you know, people dressed in vintage costumes. And it just lightens the mood, and everybody wants to sort of talk about, what are you wearing, what, you know, and just in, they, there's a feeling that everybody really wants to enjoy it. Whereas I think, like you say, you go to some sportives and people are thinking solely about the ride, and maybe they've come on their own or they're with a few friends who are actually riding it as well, and that's very much the focus of it.
There does seem to be an opportunity here because sportives are massive and getting bigger every year. People love to do them, but there is a risk that, you know, you make your family miserable if you're the only one that's riding and you drag them along. And, you know, they just get to sort of wait around and look at, you know, a few boxes of power bars and a load of carbon bling in a stall. And it's just a bit deflating, really.
Yeah, I went for a ride on the Saturday morning at RAFA with Simon Mottram, the CEO of RAFA. And he was talking about what he'd enjoyed about and what he felt about the Tempest. And I think because obviously that one, because it's, the tour's not coming back next year, it's not something that you would necessarily expect them to repeat. But he was saying that the Supercross events that they've done at Broughton Hall, which at the moment have been a one-day event, and they do the same in Alexandra Palace, they are going to look at turning that into more of a weekend event, apparently, because I think they see the same thing. I think they think, okay, you know, getting people to travel to it and bring their family and make it into more of a social event is the way forward. Cycling as a lifestyle is growing. People see that it is part of a lifestyle and it's becoming a bit more mainstream. And so it's not just about cycling anymore, involving family, involving other things. It doesn't have to exist on its own, and bringing in good food, good locations. That's what I'm hearing from people who are putting on these events, is that they have a love of cycling, but realize that it's a part of life. It's not the be all and end all. And so involving other things and putting it on as part of a music event or a food event actually just enhances the experience rather than detracts from the idea that, oh, it's only about cycling.
And so if you had to pick one out of the RAFA Tempest and the Eroica which came out top, what would you say?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I think just because it's a one-off and because it's the tour, there's a big family connection. I mean, my brother and I, we haven't been cycling together for nearly 25 years, I think. So just hanging out with him and being part of that probably this year tips in Rafa's favour, simply because it's not going to happen again. It is going to be a one-off, and it's going to be a really good memory for years and years and years. Leroica, I'm going to go back next year and it's going to be bigger and better.
It was good enough that you'll go back.
I kind of made a foolish promise that I was going to do the 100-mile route next year.
Yeah, I did the 55 because I wanted to stop along the way and see the world and take some pictures and chat to some people. But yeah, the 100 would have been challenging. I mean, it was a good route. I felt the 55.
It was.
There was a nice amount of off-road on those railway lines.
The tunnels at the beginning on the Monsall Trail were fantastic. Were you one of the lucky riders that had the choir?
I did.
I missed that.
I did record the choir. Should we have a quick blast of the choir?
That sounds good.
Yeah, let's have a quick blast of the choir. They were in a tunnel singing, and I stopped to listen. So that was the sound of a choir singing on the course of the Eroica Britannia, which was held a couple of weeks ago in the Peak District. And actually, Howard, I also managed to see the Morris dancers. Did you see the Morris dancers?
No. Where were they? I think I must have set off too early.
What was the feed stop?
Where there was Hartington, the big one with the
pond.
Yes,
the duck pond. Yeah, in Hartington, a troupe of female Morris dancers came out, and let's have a little blast of them at work. Those were the Morris dancers at the feed stop at Hartington, part of the Eroica Britannia.
I think the way that L'Eroica got the villages involved, and I talked to Jean Bahan, who's one of the organisers, getting them on board and making sure that some things were being done along the route, and that each of the villages along the route celebrated and felt part of it as well, was, you know, it's taking the festival feelers and pushing them out even further, I think, so there were even mini festivals going on in each of the villages. It's bringing this idea of the festival into the countryside as well. That worked very well.
There's a lot of advice from the Eroica that I think other people could definitely take if they're putting on their own cycling festivals. I mean, the interesting thing about the team that put on the Eroica is that they're not really from a cycling background. I mean, they're into bikes, but Jean has a sort of food and beverage background. He runs some Italian restaurants in Chesterfield and Sheffield, I think. One of his colleagues runs a media agency and handled a lot of the design stuff and the that kind of thing. And they actually brought in external expertise on the cycling side of things in terms of getting the route sorted out. That wasn't their core function. Their core function was giving people a good time and making everything look good and market it well. And then actually, you know, you can, the cycling stuff, you can sort of subcontract that to someone who knows a bit more about cycling. I think that oftentimes these events are put on by people who know a lot about cycling. They don't know much about making people have a good time. One other person I spoke to, I happened to meet him out on the course, just by the ford. Do you remember the ford where you had to go through? And he was there with a long lens taking pictures of people coming a cropper going through that water. This is Jim Dixon, who is the chief executive of the National Parks Authority for the Peak District.
Well, it's been absolutely fantastic. It's everything we expected of it and a lot more. I think it's classy. It's been done to a fantastic standard. The sheer pleasure that the riders have had experiencing this landscape, meeting the people, eating the food, it's exactly what Eroica is about. It's about celebrating the landscape and all that's in it and all of the wonderful things about cycling. Fantastic. People from all over the world have all told me they've had a fantastic time and they love this landscape.
So obviously we're enjoying the day today, but it takes a long time to put an event like this together. How have you at the National Park worked with the organisers of the event to bring it here and make it a success that it is today?
Well, it was October 18 months ago, when 20 months ago, when Jan and Marco and others came to see me. And I thought it was a great idea, but it was so ambitious. So a lot of planning, a lot of people have helped. The team, the immediate team in Eroica Britannia, absolutely first rate.
There's a tractor coming through the ford now.
Heaven knows what the tractor drivers make of all of this today.
Although, well, are they moving about hay? They're hay cutting, aren't they?
It's hay cutting, it's silage making. So it is, of course, that reminds us this is a working landscape. And you can't get the fantastic food that we've all been eating over the last couple of days without these guys who manage the land and grow the food. So it is, of course, one of the beauties of a national park, and one of the challenges is that we have to balance the productive life of the farmer with the experience of the visitor too. So this is a kind of real life check.
I understand that Eroica Britannia has a 5-year license for running the event in this country from the Italian originators. Do you think they'll be doing it again in the Peak District, or do you think they'll be moving around?
We think that this is a Peak District event. I think everything about it is distinctive to the Peak District. We've managed to pull off the most extraordinary weather over the last 3 days, which is down to the National Park Authority, of course. But the serious point is the local authorities, the communities have embraced this. And that's exactly what happens in Gaoli, in Chianti, in Tuscany, is that the community take this to heart. It gives something back to the community gives something to it. And I think that's the big difference between this and some of the slightly more commercial races.
It's a very different situation down in the New Forest, where there's been quite a lot of needle between some local people, not all local people, but and the local newspapers have amplified it and all that, and a lot of bike events that go on down in the New Forest. That's a national park. What would be your advice to people who are organising events elsewhere in the country to make them harmonious and not get the kind of New Forest, Surrey Hills situation where it's becoming a controversial thing?
I think the first thing is that the philosophy of the event has to be about involving the community and giving something back to the community. The second thing is get in at an early stage, talk to people like me, talk to district councils, talk to county councils, talk to local organisations, cycling organisations, and get them involved, because we can open the doors to talk to people, talk to landowners, and if you talk at an early stage, you can begin to address the issues. Again, the fantastic effort by Hartington has taken a lot of work. If the organisers had turned up a month before, or indeed some events where they turn up on the Sunday morning and 100 cars park there and that's it, get in early, talk to us early, and we can go through all those details that can be very, very important to somebody who lives on the route, somebody who farms on the route, one of the local businesses. But if you don't do that, then you really are in risk of essentially harming the reputation of cycling.
That was Jim Dixon, Chief Executive of the Peak District National Park Authority. Well, it's been a pleasure talking with you, Howard. Where can people read more about your take on these cycling festivals and the other stuff that you've got on the blog?
My blog is thejerseypocket.wordpress.com, or you can follow me on Twitter, Howard Mark Smith.
That's about it for the bike show this week. My thanks to Brooks England for inviting me along with their group attending at the Eroica Britannia. If you've been to any brilliant bike festivals this summer, I'd love to hear about them. As ever, you can email me, bikeshow@resonancefm.com, or send a tweet @thebikeshow. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.